the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Delighted to have Pat Kinavan with us today. Writer, actor, performer. He's been in many stage shows over the years. He's also written 5 solo plays in conjunction with Fish Amble, and they're on tour around the country at present, particularly his first play that he wrote 20 years ago, Forgotten. Pat, thank you very much for joining us.
Matt, thank you very much for having me on.
You've been in many plays as part of a cast.
Yes.
Tell us about these solo endeavours, why you've written them and what they are.
Well, about 20 years ago, Matt, I remember saying to Jim, well, it would have been about 22 years ago, I said to him I had an idea for a solo piece, knowing, of course, that it wasn't going to be solo, that there was going to be a group of people working on it, you know what I mean, production-wise and all that. I really wanted it to be inclusive and to work with really interesting people, sound designers, lighting designers, costume designers, that kind of thing. And Jim.
Who's Jim?
Jim Culleton.
Okay.
He's an extraordinary man. He's an extraordinary director. He's a visionary, and he's a very honest and a very funny and just a highly creative man. So I said to him, would you be interested in maybe going on a journey with this piece? And he did. And we started. We didn't know what we were doing at the start. I knew I had something to say about growing old in Ireland. And I presented him with a draft of Forgotten. And about 2 years later, we were on the road with it. And that's 20 years ago. I can't believe that is 20 years ago.
And tell us a bit more about Forgotten, because you were a relatively young man when you were writing about people getting old.
Yeah, I was. I presented the first Forgotten when I was 39. And I really wanted to say something about how we treat growing old and the elderly in Ireland. I was sad about it at the time, but I was also kind of furious about it. So I wanted to channel my energy, my creative energy, into talking about something that I felt was very important.
But what prompted that?
It's a really good question. I remember going to see an aunt of mine. She was in a beautiful home in Limerick. She was been so well looked after. But I remember, Matt, looking at the row of beds in the home. And she was very well looked after and had a lot of visitors. But I remember thinking, how many of these people in here don't ever get visitors and maybe are forgotten? So that's really that was the genesis of it for me, you know.
And it still holds 20 years on for you, does it?
It does. Now, I have, we've updated some references in it. For example, we have a new piece in it now where Floor, one of the main characters, the older characters in it, he actually talks about, and this wasn't in it originally, but he talks about being in this home. He doesn't know where he is. He says he's 85 miles from his village because he was moved to this home because the other home shut down. So he's in a neighbouring county, and that is a phenomenon that's happening now constantly. And people, as well as being fearful as they walk or afraid to trip or anything like that, there's a lot of elderly people don't know where they're going to end up in a home, and that is terrifying. So I have to put those new pieces into the piece just to keep it valid and, you know,
contemporary.
Contemporary, yeah. So there's a few new pieces in Forgotten. But generally, the message is the same. I try to, I suppose, contrast the difference of westerly care of the elderly to perhaps that of Asia. And that's why there's a lot of Japanese sort of styling on the piece and a lot of references on the piece to the whole idea of caring for the elderly as being a duty rather than a burden, if you get me on that. And it still matters to me an awful lot. My own mother passed away about a year and a half ago, and I saw how well she was cared for. We were so lucky to have that care for that queen. You know what I mean? She was an extraordinary woman. And all around her was the same. She happened to be in this wonderful hospital in Cove, amazing people. But I know that there are other facilities around the country that are the opposite of that. So I will keep banging the drum with gentility, but also with when I get head up about it, I can bring that out in my performance on stage.
You're touring the country with this at present?
We are. We're very, very lucky to be touring. We're touring the country with Forgotten and the other four shows as well.
And tell us a little bit about the other four shows.
Second show is called Silent. That really deals with a guy from Cork who lives on the streets of Dublin. I wrote this in 2008. It had its first production in 2011, when homelessness at the time was in maybe 2,000 people or something like that. So,
as against the 14,000 now?
As against the 14,000 now. I never thought I'd still be performing this. That just goes to show. But I'm even more determined to perform that piece still, just to keep it in the public eye, to keep reminding people that this is not just a social phenomenon, that this is actually outrageous. So that's True Theatre. Jim and Fishamble, they allow me to update, keep doing these pieces, to keep the material and the power of theatre relevant and immediate, Matt. When I was a younger man, I did a lot of ensemble pieces in the Abbey and the Gate and elsewhere, and I loved it. And sometimes I found myself doing like restoration comedy or, you know, Victorian dramas, and that was great. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm so grateful I had those experiences. But I suppose as I get older, it matters to me. That the raw material makes a difference in some way, even if it helps one person think about things in a different way through our creativity with Fishamble, the team of us, that we can actually bring something to make people think that they are not alone in the way they think, that it's okay to be profoundly sad, but it's also okay to be angry sometimes, and for that anger to push you toward getting answers and to lobby and to advocate for your loved ones and for yourself.
And what are the other pieces, quickly?
This third piece is called Underneath. That's a piece really about a woman who is heavily facially disfigured and how she gets through life like that and the prejudices she suffers as she goes forward in her life. The fourth piece is called Before. I wrote that for a very special friend of mine, who is an alienated father, and I wanted to talk about how it feels to be not having access to your child unjustly. It also applies to mothers, but I've just happened to be a man, so I wanted to write it from man's point of view. And then finally, King is the new piece, and that's about 2 years old, and that is about really a man who is agoraphobic. And I wrote it just before COVID thing, and so it's about really dealing with the world when you are terrified of the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through your culture club choices and see how they might have informed all of this writing and all of these performances. Let's start with music, because we always start with music.
Thank you, Matt.
And tell me about the first single you remember buying.
I remember buying the Electric Light Orchestra, and I remember the song being I'm Alive. And I bought it, and I had one of those, you know, the ones that look like a suitcase, the record players? They had a handle on them.
Yes.
And I played it into the table. I don't know, it was just one of the most uplifting things at the time that I had listened to. And I just remember it standing out for me when the question was asked. And it just gave me such joy. And then after about 6 months, I hated it because I played it so much. But when I was asked the question, it really made me smile.
Well, we'll play it now and see whether you like it now when you're hearing it, how many years on it is.
Yeah.
Okay, Pat Kinavan, I think of him as similar age to you, and I can remember ELO songs like Wild West Hero.
Yes.
And It's a Living Thing. I don't remember that one at all.
That was, was it?
It must have been mid to late 70s.
It was early
80s.
Early 80s, I think. I think it might have been 1980.
Okay.
Maybe.
I don't remember it.
Well, you missed it.
You still like it now. Do you hear it again?
Do you know what? It's interesting that you know this yourself, that music, the power of it, that it just brings you back to where you were. I can actually see myself clearly sitting in the parlour, as it was called, the good room.
Yeah.
For the priest. That's where the record player was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, the visual there now is so strong in my head. It's mad.
Favourite albums? You have a real 1980s bent to your music.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Bush's The Hounds of Love.
Hounds of Love blew my mind when I heard it. And equally, the Ninth Wave, which was the second helping on the album, I was equally in love with the pop songs of Running Up That Hill and The Hounds of Love and everything else. But the Ninth Wave really blew my mind. And I loved it. And I didn't know, but the Irishness of it blew my mind.
Because her mother is from Waterford, wasn't it? Yes.
And I had no idea, Matt, that she had an Irish connection. And I fell in love with the traditional instruments that were on it. So I was drawn into both sides of the album deeply. Because they were so utterly different as well. But then I found out years later, I was working in the Peacock in 1994. I think that album was 1986.
Would have been around then, yeah.
Like, she's the ultimate creative to me, the ultimate. That she's just incredible. And I was working on a show by the late and beautiful Tom McIntyre. It was called Sheep's Milk on the Boil. And Bill Whelan was the musical director. There. This was just before Riverdance ever happened. And I found out, I remember reading on the album cover, I went, oh, I'm going to be working with Bill Whelan. And he was on The Hounds of Love.
Was he? You didn't know that.
And Donna Lunny was on it, geniuses. And the beautiful genius, John Sheehan, was on it, playing fiddle. And so there was a huge Irish component in it. She brought these traditional musicians together. And and I met John Sheehan as well down at Listowel Arts Festival. What a wonderful, wonderful human being. And I remember talking to him about that, and he told me of some of his experiences of recording with Kate. Yeah.
Another album you mentioned, we're going to play a little bit from it. Alice Amoye, who had been with Yazoo and then brought out an album in 1984 called Alf. So before you tell us about this, let's hear perhaps the best known track from that, All Cried Out. So tell us, why did you pick that, Pat?
It was at the time when it came out, again, on that small record player. I played it constantly. I just knew that I was listening to something extraordinary. That voice was not just singing. I knew it was coming from her gut, You know, it was a really emotional album, and a lot of the slower tracks on it as well were really, really wrenching, you know. Then you had Love Resurrection, I think, was on that album as well. It was just one of those voices that is one of the greatest voices. Amazing.
And keeping that 80s theme going, your favourite bands are very much 80s and 90s icons. A-ha and Duran Duran. You were into your pop in that era, weren't you?
I have a very eclectic taste in everything, Matt, particularly music. And I remember at the time, I was into A-ha and I was into Carl Orff as well, which is classic, classical music. And I remember that sound of A-ha. I'd never heard it before. It was that kind of perfect sort of pop formula. And it just completely hauled me in. And Duran Duran, of course, amazing. I loved them.
Well, let's hear a bit of Duran Duran. We talk a bit more about them. This is from the album Rio. This is Save a Prayer. Okay, that's Duran Duran from the album Rio, Save a Prayer. I was just saying there while we were playing the music to Pat, I saw them in St. Anne's Park in Raheny about 4 years ago, I think, at this stage. Terrific. It was great. And the amount of people there of all ages,
that's great,
loving the music.
Yeah, it's great to hear that they're still brilliant.
Your favourite gigs? You've given us two. You've given us Sinead O'Connor at the National Stadium back in 1991.
I'll never forget it.
Why is that?
I was a huge fan of The Lion and the Cobra, that wonderful album. And again, a creature, you know, like at the time, a voice, like just a kind of embodiment. I remember when I first heard her, a kind of embodiment of just sadness and vicious intent. Do you know what I mean? Like commitment to the artistry of it. And so then her next album came out, I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got. And this was almost like a triumphant return to Dublin, because I think those first singles had come off that second album. And she was the smallest, biggest person I've ever seen on the stage.
Great description.
She was the smallest. She looked like a little fairy that had been magnified 100 times, because her presence was so incredible. And the place was welcoming her home, really. Everyone was just crying, roaring, and she just took the stage. It was an extra. I never, ever forget it.
We don't have that gig, but just as an example from around that time, this is from the 1990 Amnesty International Human Rights Concerts, a live recording of Nothing Compares to You.
It's been 7 hours and 15. Your love, I'm gone every night and sleep all since you took your love. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever. I can eat my dinner in a family.
said nothing can.
Sinead O'Connor and Nathan Cabrera's to you, Pat. I was lucky enough once to hear her sing unaccompanied in a venue. No music at all, just singing. And her voice was extraordinary. But you were just saying off air there as well about the range that she had in her voice.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm sure other people have thought this. I always thought I imagined it. But she had the most unique quality in her voice, particularly live. It sounded as if she was singing in two octaves at the same time. In almost like a soprano octave, but also way beyond and below that. And I don't know how that just occurred in her voice. That was just such a gift to hear.
And one other gig before we get to the break, Whitney Houston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll never forget it. My sister came up from Cork, and that was 2010, I think.
Yeah.
In the O2.
As it was then.
As it was. And she was getting a lot of slack. She had done a tour around Europe, and people were saying, it's not the same Whitney, and she's lost it, and the voice isn't the same. No way. She was incredible. Like, I think people started to believe that she wasn't as good as she was. It was a kind of a Chinese whisper.
Yeah.
But actually, being there was stunning. I think one of her best albums, her last album, I Look to You, and she sang Million Dollar Bill, and I Look to You and a couple of others from that, and she was stunning. She had a little table on stage and she had a glass of water, and she'd go over every now and then and she'd pick up the glass of water, but she'd pick it up and she'd look at the audience and kind of wink at us, and she was still incredibly beautiful. But I thought her voice was better than it ever was, because it was like she had a rasp about it, you know. She had life in her voice then. She had experience, like, in her voice. Sinead.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Pat Kinavan is with us, and we will be back with more of his choices after the break. Welcome back. Pat Kinavan is with us. He is going around the country with his solo plays, including Forgotten. Now, let's talk about non-musical stuff. Movies. You've gone for a couple of old classics. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and Gone with the Wind? Mm. Why have you picked those?
I just could watch them all week. I just think the performances and the kind of classic performances in them, kind of the way they did it then was extraordinary. They were acting. They were using their faces. They were acting. These were highly skilled performers. They weren't just doing nothing on screen. And sometimes a lot of modern stuff is just absolutely stone still and there's nothing going on.
That's the Botox, maybe.
Yeah, it probably is. And but that was, they weren't afraid to look ugly. Do you know what I mean? Even Vivien Leigh looked dodgy in that movie at times. You know what I mean? When her face moved, it moved. When her forehead wrinkled, it wrinkled. You know what I mean? And of course, Joan Crawford and
Happened to Baby Jane.
In What Happened to Baby Jane. In fact, everyone in What Happened to Baby Jane. Just like this kind of really ghostly sort of grotesque piece, which is hilariously funny as well. So I'm a big classic movie person. I'm not really modern cinema buff.
And then when it comes to theatre, you said the Playboy of the Western World.
Mm, it's just my favourite creation of a play, I think. It has everything. When I was a child, when I was a young fella, I remember reading it again and again and again. I did it from a Leaving Cert. And I remember writing to RTE when I was in my teens. And I said, is there any way that I could come in and be a part, if they were ever doing the Playboy of the Western World? And they wrote back to me and said no, because they had their own actors. But actually, in my 30s, I ended up playing the Playboy in RTE.
Fair play.
And it blew my mind, because it's my favourite play, and it's sing genius.
You also have modern day Marina Carr, and you've got By the Bog of Cats.
Yeah, By the Bog of Cats is an incredible piece of theatre. I think Marina Carr is probably one of the best writers we've ever had. She's stunning and worldwide. We travel a lot now, Matt. We travel all over the place with these shows. And when we talk to people in theatre all over the world, they know Marina's work. As well as that, she's an absolute lady.
And you have then for musical, Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls, loved it, yeah. I remember watching it when I was a young fella. Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra. Two stunning performances in it. And the music is just brilliant. And I think it's one of those musicals that it is heavily for men and women. You know what I mean? It's The Gamblers.
Okay, I'm conscious of the time. Books, I believe you don't read that much fiction. That's surprising when you're a writer.
I know. I never really was into fiction. I read a lot of history and I read a lot of poetry and kind of factual stuff. I never really trained my head into fiction and I'd love to be able to read it. I just don't have that kind of brain. But I think on one of my choices there was my book that I had in school of poetry.
Soundings.
And I repeated my Leave Insert Matt because I wanted to get Honours Irish. I didn't get it the first time. So I did two different syllabuses of poetry. So I did it twice the poetry really in Soundings.
Of course, because different years, different poetry.
And yeah. It's with me always. The book, I have it with me all the time, like from Chaucer, Shakespeare, right up to Thomas Kinsella, Yeats, you know what I mean? And all the classic Irish poets. I love just dipping in and reading them. I got a good foundation, I think, in like classic Irish poetry.
But another book you mentioned is by Khalil Gibran, The Prophet.
The Prophet, yeah. It's a beautiful piece and I just was introduced to it about 10 years ago and I keep dipping back into it and how the prophet talks of life and of patience and of how being a parent or being a child or being a lawyer or being fair. Like there's each, you can just pick up and read two pages at a time and drop it. But it's the most beautifully written book that I have.
Okay, I'm tight on time, so I want to get to your television. As a child, what did you grow up with?
The Little House on the Prairie. Nellie Olson and Laura Ingalls. Yeah.
Okay.
Loved it.
And then as an adult, you've gone for Frasier as your favourite.
Yeah, I love Frasier. I watch it again and again.
Let's hear a little bit of Kelsey Grammer as Dr. Frasier Crane.
Stunning.
Hello, Doug. This is Dr. Frasier Crane. I'm listening.
Yeah, well, it's about my mother. She's getting on now, and she doesn't have much of a life. And she didn't want to do anything or go anywhere, and she literally hangs around the house all day. I mean, it's very frustrating.
I'm sorry. Can we just go back for a second? You said your mother literally hangs around the house. Well, I suppose it's a pet peeve of mine, but what you mean to say is that she figuratively hangs around the house. To literally hang around the house, you'd have to be a bat or a spider monkey. Now, back to your problem.
Do you mind if we stop while I tell you my pet peeve?
Well, not at all.
I hate it when intellectual pinheads with superiority complexes nitpick your grammar when you come to them for help. That's what I got a problem with.
I think what he means is that is a thing with which he has a problem.
Brilliant. Mm. Did you ever watch the new Frasier, the sort of the reboot of the last couple of years?
I haven't seen it, have you?
A little bit. It's not bad,
right.
But it's not classic Frasier.
Yeah, I'll give it a chance. I'm just afraid in case it doesn't do me any favours, do you know what I mean?
So we're going to finish. Every guest got asked for a buried treasure, something different, something unusual. And you've brought up a band that I haven't heard of for God knows how many years, Auto Da Fé.
Auto Da Fé, in my, sometimes in my lonely teens in the wintertime, down in my, in the parlour in Cove, out the countryside, I just got into Auto Da Fé, this Dublin band, and the incredible Gay and Trevor Knight.
Yeah.
And they were just stunning. And I remember buying their singles in Cork City And it was kind of alternative as well to get the singles in Cork City. But it was amazing. Like November.
That's the track we have.
Bad Experience is the other one.
We have November. Let's hear it.
Ah, lovely.
That really is a buried treasure. I doubt if I've heard that in nearly 40 years. Great track.
They're wonderful. They were just fantastic. And mad, I ended up in a production of Salome in the Gate Theatre about 1991. And who was on stage playing piano but Trevor Knight? Such a talented man.
If you want details of Pat Kinnavan's performances, you can go to fishamble.com and the details are there of the various appearances throughout the country. Pat Kinnavan, it's been great having you for the Culture Club. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Matt.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.